Would everyone in the Senate chamber, as well as our guests in the galleries, please rise for a prayer by Reverend Gawk, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag.
In the 10th chapter of Hebrews, we read, "Do not therefore abandon that confidence of yours, for it has great recompense of reward." Almighty God, you call us to be co-workers with you in this world that you have created. Help us to boldly address the difficulties and opposition to encounter as we work to do what is most needed at this awful, dreadful time. Help us, Lord, to face the uphill climb to bring understanding among us. Help us, Lord, to be the servants that you have called to be here at this time and place, to do the work that we must complete. And may we, Lord, be bold and achieve the recompense of faithfulness to your calling. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Come on, sir.
Will we see you tomorrow?
I will be here.
Oh, wait, Friday. Today's Wednesday.
I'll be here Friday, too. Got to be faithful.
Thank you. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Arthur, Bernsketter, Brown, Burleson, Serapoy, Crawford, Cunningham, Igel, Emery, Hageman, Hoskins, Huff, Koenig, Leibler, Luchtmeyer, May, Nasheed, O'Loughlin, Onder, Riddle, Rizzo, Rowden, Sater, Schatz, Shoup, Sifton, Wallingford, Walsh, White, Whelan, Williams.
Present. Senator from Andrew. Thank you, Senator. Senator from the 20th is here. Quorum has been established. The Senate is in session. Madam Secretary, please read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, second regular session, 49th day, Tuesday, May 5th, 2020. The Senate met pursuant to adjournment.
Senator from Boone.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
You've heard the motion from the Senator of Boone County. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Hearing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
Senator from Boone County renews his motion that the reading of the journal be suspended, though it be approved as have been fully read. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have approved the journal. Petitions, memorials, and remonstrances. Resolutions. Concurrent resolutions. Senator from Boone.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you inquire from the Secretary if there are messages from the House, and if so, I ask that they be read.
There are messages from the House. Madam Secretary, please read those messages.
Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Committee Substitute, Senate Committee Substitute, Senate Bill 662, entitled An Act Relating to Judicial Proceedings, with House Amendment 1, House Amendment 2, House Amendment 3, House Amendment 4, House Amendment 5, House Amendment 1, 2, House Amendment 6, House Amendment 6 as amended, House Amendment 7, House Amendment 8, House Amendment 9, House Amendment 10, adopted, emergency clause defeated, in which the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested, respectfully submitted. Dana Rodeman Miller, Chief Clerk.
Senator from Boone. Senator from Boone.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of second reading of House bills.
Hearing no objection, the order of business will be second reading of House bills. Senator from Franklin County.
Thank you, Mr. President. The House Committee substitute for House Bill 2017.
House Committee substitute for House Bill 2017, an act to appropriate money for capital improvement and other purposes for the several departments and offices of state government and the several divisions and programs thereof.
Appropriations. House Committee substitute for House Bill 2018.
House Committee substitute for House Bill 2018, an act to appropriate money for the several departments and offices of state government and the several divisions and programs thereof.
Appropriations. House Committee substitute for House Bill 2019.
House Committee substitute for House Bill 2019, an act to appropriate money for the several departments and offices of state government and the several divisions and programs thereof.
House Bill 2015.
House Bill 2015, an act to appropriate money for the supplemental purposes for the expenses, grants, and distributions of the several departments and offices of state government and the several divisions and programs thereof.
Appropriations.
Senator from Boone.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of reports of standing committees.
Hearing no objection, the order of business will be reports of standing committees. The Senator from Webster County.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee on Physical Oversight has a number of reports.
Thank you, Senator. Please send your report forward. Madam Secretary, please read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Fiscal Oversight, to which was referred House Bill 1963 with Senate Committee substitute, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Fiscal Oversight, to which was referred House Bill 1700 with Senate Committee substitute, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Fiscal Oversight, to which was referred Senate Substitute Number 2, Senate Committee Substitute, House Committee Substitute, House Bill 1854, as amended, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Fiscal Oversight, to which was referred House Committee Substitute Number 2, House Bill 1896, with Senate Committee Substitute, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Fiscal Oversight, to which was referred House Bill 1559 with Senate Committee Substitute, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Fiscal Oversight, to which was referred House Committee Substitute, House Bill 1682 with Senate Committee Substitute, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Fiscal Oversight, to which was referred House Committee Substitute, House Bill 1683, with Senate Committee Substitute, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Respectfully submitted, Senator Cunningham, Chairman.
Senator from Boone.
President, I ask that you recognize the Senator from Andrew for a privilege motion on House Bill 1768 with Senate Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute as amended.
Senator from Andrew, welcome back to the chamber.
Will, Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I have a privilege motion.
State your motion.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that Senate refuse to recede on Senate substitute for Senate committee substitute as amended for House Bill number 1768 and grant the House a conference thereon.
You've heard the motion from the Senator of Andrew County. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from the 24th.
Mr. President, back to inquiring of the senator from Andrew, please.
Senator from Andrew County, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. Can you just remind us of the differences between the two bills?
This is the broadband bill. They didn't accept all the Senate amendments. I don't know which ones they're. I don't have that right now, but I certainly think it's something that we need to go to conference on. It had a number of provisions in there. I don't have that information in front of me right now. One of them was expanding the NID districts. That was kind of the underlying bill. It allowed NIDs to be able to use for broadband purposes. It extends the broadband sunset, for the broadband, rural broadband program. That was kind of the bill that I had earlier on. It had a provision dealing with small cells that Senator, you worked out an agreement on to move forward on that one. I think it set up another like NID opportunity to develop it was a broadband district to do a special political subdivision for broadband. I think the senator from Barrie had a provision there.
Let me just clarify. We're going to conference because we would like the House to accept the additions that
yes.
we made to the bill.
At least have the discussion on it.
And we just did this recently, so.
Yes,
we obviously.
Just did. Yeah.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion? Hearing none, Senator from Andrew, you recognize the close.
I renew my motion, Mr.
Thank you, Senator. Senator from Andrew asks that the Senate refuse the position and grant a conference on House Bill number 1768 with Senate substitute and Senate committee substitute. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have passed the motion. Senator from Boone.
President, without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of House bills on third reading on the formal calendar, and I'd ask that you call the calendar.
Hearing no objection, the order of business will be House bills on third reading, formal calendar, House committee substitute for House bill 1414 with Senate committee substitute, the senator from Barrie County.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you lay that bill on the informal calendar, please?
That bill shall be placed on the informal calendar. House committee substitute for House Bill 1682 with Senate committee substitute, Senator from Barrie.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you lay that bill on the informal calendar, please?
That bill shall be placed on the informal calendar. House committee substitute for House Bill 1683 with Senate committee substitute, the senator from Cape Girardeau County.
Thank you, Mr. President. Will you please lay that over on the informal calendar?
That shall be placed on the informal calendar. House committee substitute for House Bill 2049 with Senate committee substitute, the senator from Barton County.
Mr. President, please lay that on the informal calendar.
That bill shall be placed on the informal calendar. House Bill 1963 with Senate Committee Substitute, the senator from Butler County.
Thank you, Mr. President. You recognize me okay without my mask on?
You're looking good, Senator. You always
thank
do.
Thank you. Mr. President, I now move that House Bill 1963 be taken up for third reading and final passage.
You've heard the motion from the senator of Butler County. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator, your bill is now before the body.
Thank you, Mr. President. I now move the House Bill 1963 be third read and finally passed, and I have a Senate substitute. I move for waiver of the reading as it has been distributed and passed around.
Senator, would you care to make a motion to first adopt the Senate committee sub?
I do. I need to adopt that committee sub.
Thank you, Senator. Please send your Senate substitute forward. Hearing no objection, a waiver of the reading shall be granted. Senator, you feel free to adopt the Senate sub. If I missed it, I apologize, and then go ahead and explain it.
Thank you.
Senator, you're free to adopt the Senate sub and explain it.
I do move to adopt the Senate sub.
And feel free to explain your substitute.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is a transportation omnibus bill, so everybody put their seatbelts on. Including in the bill are some non-controversial bills heard in the Senate Transportation Committee and have received bipartisan support. Provisions included in this bill will help Missourians and visitors. One of the first things we do is allow individuals to renew their driver's license online. I think that's a really good idea. Number two is allows the deaf and hard of hearing to obtain a CDL with accommodations for the hearing test. Next is allows a medical alert information on driver's licenses for better care in the case of an emergency. Next is extends a temporary voter safety ID cards to allow vacationers the option to apply for a temporary boating permit. This keeps visitors aware of Missouri boating regulations and keeps our waterways safer. Next is allow Missourians to fly non-commercial aircrafts up to 200 hours instead of 50 hours and still be subject to the personal property tax rate of 5%. Removes the $100,000 bond requirement for small rental leasing companies to register their rentals. A bill was filed last year to help large fleet owners register vehicles at once by allowing them to register all the vehicles and submit a $100,000 bond. However, the language inadvertently captured the small rental companies as well. So language included this bill removes them from that requirement. The main goal of this legislation was to have a bill that will help Missourians. With that, Mr. President, I'll be welcome to take any questions.
The senator from Butler has moved for the adoption of the Senate substitute to the Senate committee substitute for House Bill number 1963. Does any senator wish to be heard on that motion? The senator from the 11th District is on his feet.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to inquire the senator from 25th.
Senator from Butler, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Hey, Senator. How are you this morning?
Doing good.
So I just have a quick question here. I saw some of this morning in fiscal oversight. The mud flap requirements, did you say that? I may not have been paying attention.
What was it again?
The part in here about mud flap requirements. Do you know anything about that? I think it's a House thing, so you might not. But
if we could get a little bit of quiet in the chamber, the two senators are having a hard time hearing each other in debate.
Right,
please take your conversations to side gallery.
Tell me the subject again.
So, hang on here. I'm going to pull this down so we can hear. I think I'm in safe distance here. Where is it? It is mud flap requirements. It is in section 307.
Yes, that's the senator from Shelby had the mud flap requirement.
Okay, that's okay. All right. I don't think it's that big of a deal. I just was curious if you had any idea. I think it's mostly about the height and requirement.
Oh, I'll tell you what happens is when you're operating construction trailers and you go in off road and you're in all kinds of bad spots and your trailer goes down like this,
sure.
A lot of times you'll back up, your mud flap is too long.
That's what I think it's
about.
And
it'll tear the whole thing off. So what we're wanting to do is shorten it a little bit where at least we have a mud flap back there so we don't break somebody's windshield out.
Got it.
But what's happening is because the regulation is right now the mud flap's too long on those type trailers.
Got it. Okay. Thank you. Mr. President?
Senator from the 11th?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I'd like to inquire the senator from Clay, if I could.
Senator from Clay, do you yield to an inquiry?
I do.
She does. Proceed.
Hey, Senator, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. This is the first time I really tried to speak on the floor with a mask on. It's a little difficult, but I'll do my best here. So I know that there's a mud flap requirement in here. I don't think it's a big deal. I think it's fine. I don't have any problem with the bill in general. I noticed yesterday in the House they were talking about brass knuckles.
I saw that.
House. And I've noticed a lot of times, and especially this morning in fiscal oversight, we're doing pretty big bills. in the middle of what could end up being some of the deadliest days in Missouri for this coronavirus. And we're here, we're talking about,
yeah, you know,
about mud flaps and brass knuckles.
I have spent the last week or so really thinking about this session, and I understand that we all have priorities that are important to the people we represent, and I think this session, or at least the last 2 weeks of it, have sort of turned into a Rorschach test, and that everyone sort of saw this session however they wanted to interpret it. And for some people, they felt like we've lost 6 weeks and now we need to make up for lost time. Others thought that this would be an opportunity to work on the budget and a COVID-19 response. So I think we all have different understandings of how this time should be used. It was interesting that the House decided to legalize brass knuckles yesterday. And I guess their thinking is that, you know, there's nothing too microscopic to punch, including the coronavirus. Yeah. And that may be their attempt to beat back what we're seeing in the pandemic. But, yeah, I mean, there are provisions in here that are common sense and,
yeah, and
good policy. But I guess the overarching question is this the best way that we spend our time, or are there other things that we should focus on? Or,
and I understand we're still waiting to get the budget done, and you know, there's some things we can do to knock some stuff out. And I don't have a problem with this bill, so I'm not holding anything up or anything. I just wanted to be kind of clear and decisive to people that maybe were listening about some of the stuff that we're tackling right now. So I don't want to hold the senator's bill up. He's a good man, and he works really hard for the transportation aspect of the state of Missouri. So thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Further discussion, the senator from Barton County.
President, I have an amendment.
Please send your amendment forward.
It has been distributed. I would ask for a waiver of the reading, and I move for its adoption.
Hearing no objection, a waiver of the reading shall be granted. Senator, you've moved for the amendment's adoption. Would you care to explain it?
I will, Mr. President. This is a simple road naming in the county of Henry. Within the space of less than a year, we had two law enforcement officers killed in the line of duty. And this names a section of road for each of those officers. Gary Lee Michael, who was of Clinton, and he was killed in the line of duty, leaves a family with children, a wife and children. And also Christopher Ryan Morton, who, age 30, was killed in the line of duty in law enforcement. And this names a section of road for each of those. And, Mr. President, I have an amendment to the amendment.
If we could get a little quiet in the chamber so we can hear the senator offer his amendment to the amendment. Please send your amendment to the amendment forward.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move for its adoption. It has not been distributed, but it is very short, and I would ask that it be read. And ask for so I wouldn't ask for a waiver of the reading. So if it could be read.
Madam Secretary, please read the amendment to the amendment.
Senate Amendment 1 to Senate Amendment 1, offered by Senator Emery. Amend Senate Amendment 1, Senate Substitute, Senate Committee Substitute, House Bill Number 1963, page 1, line 5 of said amendment by inserting immediately after, quote, officer, end quote, the following, quote, Christopher, end quote, period.
Senator, would you care to move for the adoption of this? I'm sorry if I missed it, and then feel free to explain it.
Amendment, Mr. President. And all it does, when we, in our haste, we published his given name rather than his legal name. This changes the officer's name to his legal name. I'd be happy to answer questions. Otherwise, I renew my motion.
Senator from Barton moves for the adoption of Senate Amendment 1 to Senate Amendment 1 for the Senate substitute to Senate Committee substitute for House Bill number 1963. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from Butler.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm in support of this amendment.
Thank you, Senator. Further discussion. Senator from the 14th, are you seeking to be recognized? No. Senator from Barton, you are recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close on the amendment to the amendment.
Senator from Barton renews his motion that Senate Amendment number 1 to Senate Amendment number 1 for Senate substitute to Senate Committee substitute for House Bill 1963 be adopted. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have adopted Senate Amendment number 1. Senator from Barton.
On the amendment now. I renew my motion to adopt the amendment as amended.
Senator Barton renews his motion to adopt Senate Amendment number 1 as amended to the Senate substitute for Senate Committee substitute for House Bill 1963. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Hearing none, Senator, recognized to close.
I close.
Senator from Barton renews his motion that Senate Amendment number 1, the Senate substitute, Senate Committee substitute, and House Bill 1963 be adopted. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have adopted the amendment. Senator from the 14th District.
Mr. President, I have an amendment.
Please send your amendment forward. Senator, are you seeking a waiver of the reading, or would you like your amendment read?
I don't need a waiver of the reading.
I'm sorry, Senator?
We can waive the reading.
The senator from the 14th has requested a waiver of the reading. Hearing no objection, Senator, feel free to move for the adoption and then explain your amendment, please.
So basically what this does, Mr. President, is that it establishes a backstopper's special license plate, and it just makes a $10 contribution to the Backstopper's General Operating Fund or the Backstopper's Education Fund, which is an organization that consists of firefighters, EMS services, as well as police. And they also pay a $15 fee in addition to the regular registration fee, but no additional fee shall be charged for the personalization of the Backstopper's special license plate. So it's just a license plate for Backstoppers.
Thank you, Senator. I might have missed it. Would you move for the adoption of that amendment, please? Senator from the 14th, would you move for the adoption?
I move, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. I'm sorry if I missed that. Senator from the 14th District has moved for the adoption of Senate Amendment number 2. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from Butler County.
Thank you, Mr. President. Speak on the amendment.
Proceed.
I'm in full support of that amendment. It's a good amendment.
Thank you, Senator. Further discussion on the adoption motion, Senator from the 23rd.
Senator from the 14th.
Senator from the 14th, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Hey, Senator, good morning. Sounds like we got a good amendment here. I just want to make sure I understand. This would lead to the creation of a backstopper's license plate that those going to the DMV to get a renewal of their plate could voluntarily choose to pay an additional fee for in order to have the special backstopper's license plate, and then the proceeds would be donated to backstoppers. Is that how it works?
That is correct.
So it's not a fee or tax that we're imposing. We're basically giving folks an option to purchase a backstopper's plate that would ultimately get some money back into the backstopper's organization.
That is correct.
Do we have any idea how much we might be able to raise for the backstoppers?
I do not know how much we'll be able to raise, but if you allow this amendment on and we pass it, I'll get back to you next year.
Well, I don't know if that was That suddenly makes me a little nervous, Senator, how you put that. But I think that the Backstoppers is a great organization. I'd be curious if your office does have some information, maybe where this is used in other states, how much money we might raise. But because it's voluntary, I think that it certainly makes sense. I sure appreciate you bringing it forward.
And I keep you in the loop. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion on the adoption motion. Hearing none, Senator, you are recognized to close.
Close, Mr. President.
Senator from the 14th renews his motion that Senate Amendment Number 2 for the Senate substitute to Senate Committee substitute to House Bill 1963 be adopted. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have adopted Senate Amendment Number 2. Senator from the 14th.
Motion.
We've adopted the amendment, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion on the, we're back on the motion for the adoption of the Senate substitute offered by the Senator from Butler County. Does any Senator desire to be heard? Senator from
the 23rd. To inquire from the Senator from Butler.
Senator from Butler, do you yield?
Yes.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Senator. Good morning.
Hey, how you doing?
It looks like we may have some other folks that are going to continue to offer amendments, so I thought I would jump up and ask some questions while we determine who's going to go next. I do have a question about, it looks like according to your spreadsheet, by the way, I'm a big spreadsheet guy, so I really appreciate you doing this.
You like that?
I like that. House Committee substitute for House Bill 1333 has to do with the taxation of limited flight hour aircraft?
Yes.
I was searching for who the Senate handler of that bill is. Do you know who that is? Because they may be the better person to ask.
Representative questions. Sharp.
Do you know who over in the Senate side is handling that? I was just curious as far as limited flight hour aircraft. If I understand correctly, we're increasing the number of hours that a small aircraft can have before it's subject to personal property tax. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So, what are we changing the limit to?
It goes from 50 hours. If you put it, it goes up to 50 hours right now, and it's going to go to 200.
Okay. So, in other words, if you fly less than 200 hours or less, then that aircraft is not going to be subject to personal property tax. As you know, I've had a lot of conversations about personal property tax, so this kind of got my interest. Do we know how many aircraft will suddenly fall out of the range of being taxed on personal property tax if this goes through?
No.
And to kind of take a step back to see, got to get an understanding of where I'm going here. When I had some legislation that had to do with personal property taxes that would actually move the state of Missouri away from personal property taxes. The reason that I was pursuing that is because for right now, only 21 states actually have any personal property tax. Could be airplanes, could be vehicles that we all pay, et cetera, et cetera. And of those 21 states, we actually have the third highest rate of personal property tax anywhere in the country. And the reason is because the rate at which we determine appraised value over the actual true market value, that modifier, is pretty high. So any opportunity to kind of roll back personal property tax is generally something I'm supportive of. I'm just trying to get an understanding of what the fiscal impact would be, because I know that when I had a conversation about personal property taxes as it relates to vehicles and trailers, there was a tremendous amount of pushback from local cities and counties that were worried about what would happen to their revenue streams if there was anything done to personal property tax. Has there been any feedback from counties that they may be moving away from that position, that they may be open to a more productive conversation about moving the state away from personal property taxes that you're aware of?
Not that I'm aware of. It had a vote of 148 to 8 over in the House. So,
148 to 8, that's a pretty good score. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think this, if we've opened up personal property taxes on this bill, this may be a good chance to have a further conversation on personal property tax. But I know there are other amendments waiting, Senator, so I will appreciate the inquiry, and I will see what other amendments come forward. So I do appreciate the inquiry, and I'll see if I can get a little more information on personal property taxes. Yeah. Thank you, Senator.
Okay. Everything stays the same other than the fact it's going up to 200 hours.
Understood. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion on the adoption of the Senate substitute, the Senator from Webster County.
I have an amendment.
Please send your amendment forward.
Thank you.
Mr. President, the amendment has been distributed. It ends in point 04. Request a waiver of the reading.
Hearing no objection, a waiver of the reading shall be granted. Senator, would you move for your amendment's adoption and then feel free to explain it?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move for the adoption of the amendment. This is something we passed out of the Senate. It's just another place for it as these crazy times we're in. It deals with school transportation fund receiving excess money from DESE that's unspent. There's no new money in this.
Senator from Webster has moved for the adoption of Senate Amendment number 3. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from Barton.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I inquire the senator from Webster?
Senator from Webster, do you yield?
Sure.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. I remember this.
Yep. Good. You have a good memory.
I have the same concern as when it passed out of here the first time, is that it really does tend to move appropriation out of the Appropriations Committee, and it moves money around that normally the money would come back into the general fund. Is that right?
That would be correct.
And then it would be we'd be reappropriated as according to the legislature.
I don't know.
And this takes it out of that realm and says that it's going to be automatically appropriated to transportation. I think there was a lot of sentiment, as I recall, because we are underfunding transportation right now. I don't think anyone denies that. Do you?
No. We're short by, and apparently shorter next year with the cuts being made in transportation. There would not be any money for it. But in a way, it's not taken away because we're sending to DESE. And DESE, that's where it's going to be spent at. That's where we've said it shall go to DESE and be spent. So I don't look like we're, you know, taking away or hiding it or doing anything else. Whenever we don't pay our bills, I think we have an obligation to pay our bills. And we're clearly not doing that. I think we're several hundred thousand dollars short every year, several million dollars short.
Right. And I think that's probably why there was some sentiment for doing it, even though it's kind of a break in the traditional way that money flows. And I personally don't have a big issue with moving more money into transportation. I do think I have a problem with how this bill does it as an automatic reappropriation as opposed to having to come back through the legislature. Did you get any pushback at all from I don't this has this bill been heard in the House?
No, it's several amendments over there, and it is over there.
Is it on the floor?
Yeah, no, it's not on the floor. It's
in
ready
committee.
To go to the floor. They were waiting to put some amendments on it.
Okay, so it's still in committee in the House?
Yes.
Okay, and that's fine. I was just going to ask whether there had been any much pushback or feedback from the House, but apparently not.
No, none whatsoever.
Okay. Thank you, Senator.
And it passed out of here by 27 votes, so I think
right,
we did that
right.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there weren't a large number of us that were concerned.
All right, well, thank you.
Thank you, Senator. I appreciate you taking my inquiry. Mr. President, may I inquire the senator from the 23rd?
Sorry, Senator. Senator from the 23rd, do you yield to an inquiry?
I do, Mr. President.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Senator. I think you're the one that actually drew my attention to the misapplication of appropriations here.
So, yeah, I think that when this came up the first time, Senator, I forget exactly what day that was. I think that was actually in January.
It was early, right.
It was early on. When it came to the floor, I think we started a conversation that was kind of walking through what the impact was to our appropriations process.
Right.
And I think there were some good points made on the floor. We ultimately ended up at that time passing that bill, sending it over to the House, and based on the feedback you just got from the senator from Webster, it doesn't appear that the House is very motivated to move that through the system. It doesn't sound like it's made it through the House. It doesn't sound like it's moving very quickly. We had a conversation with some of the appropriation staff or folks over on the House side that shared some of the similar concerns that you and I expressed on the floor. Because it's been a couple months, Senator, and this is your inquiry, so I don't want to derail it, but I think it might be good to kind of open that discussion back up so that we can bring the body back into what the thought process was going into this bill.
Absolutely, and that's why I was inquiring of you to see whether you were willing to kind of walk back through your concerns. I'm not trying to filibuster the amendment, but I agree. I do think it's important for us to at least consider this and consider the significance of it. And you're the one that kind of raised the issue. I was a little uneasy with it when I read it, but I understood the need in transportation. It was kind of like, well, we need the money there, and I hadn't really seriously considered that the process was really somewhat violated with this approach. And if it was applied in other arenas, it could be a pretty serious problem.
Well, and not only that, I think we can do that. And then I'd like to have a conversation about, you know, now here we are 3+ months ahead of where we were in January, and a lot has happened. A lot has happened, not just in our state, but in our budgeting process. We just passed a bill yesterday that had to do with K-12 secondary elementary education. So let's start, first of all, with the underlying bill and kind of where that conversation was. So I think everybody here in the chamber understands that the transportation line item in the education bill is under House Bill 2. That's the K-12 Education Foundation formula. And the idea behind this bill was, in the event that there was any leftover money in the foundation formula line item at the end of the fiscal year, instead of that money going back into the general revenue fund, it would instead be automatically diverted to the transportation education line item at the end of the year. As most people are aware, everything that goes into our foundation formula is built on estimates of the number of students that are attending school, the number of student days that go into there. And the estimates that go into that foundation formula are provided by our school districts to DESE so that they can get us a number of what is expected to be needed in order to meet the obligations of the foundation formula in the first place. Obviously, as with any estimate, sometimes those numbers are a little off. Sometimes they're a little bit high. Sometimes they're a little bit low. I think DESE has typically done a really good job trying to get us a correct estimate, because if they're wrong, if they're too low, then there's not going to be any spending authority to get all the money they deserved by the number of students that actually went to school in the state of Missouri. If they're high, it doesn't really provide any benefit to be high either, because any extra money would have just gone back into the general revenue fund. In fact, if they're too high, then money will be stuck in that line item at the end of the fiscal year, whereas it could have been spent on other line items.
It's my understanding, Senator, just briefly, that typically, currently, those estimates usually are conservatively low. This could change that.
So I think we had a system where there was no motivation for those estimates coming in from DESE to be either high or low. There was no way, you know, and so what DESE could focus on was giving us the best number they could. Maybe they would, you're right, they would tilt a little bit towards the conservative end. In fact, if the estimate was more than 5% off, they would actually have, there's a penalty provision in the law to discourage them from being too far off. So, in other words, we had a really good system with some backstops in there to prevent estimates from coming in wildly out of place. So now with this bill, though, as you said, Senator, that might actually change. What this bill does is it says to essentially the Department of Secondary and Elementary and Secondary Education is that in the event that your estimates are high, instead of all that money just going back into general revenue fund, it will automatically move the money into the transportation line item.
Right.
So proponents of this particular bill, Mr. President, I'm having trouble hearing the senator from Barton. I apologize, Senator.
Right.
If we could take our conversations to the side galleries so the senators could hear each other in debate, that would be greatly appreciated. Senators, please proceed without the senator from Franklin interrupting you.
Senator from Franklin had some really important things that he needed to say.
He has a strong voice, Senator. He has a strong voice, and he's always smiling, and he's very charismatic. So in any event, what we're saying essentially under this new provision to the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education is that in the event that your estimate is high, that money will automatically be redirected towards the transportation education line item instead of going back into the general fund. So now for proponents of additional funding in transportation, there is now a motivation to provide a high estimate.
Right.
And so we have taken a system that is dependent upon the appropriation year by year being mixed with every other priority that you know, Senator, we talked about extensively yesterday and we talk about extensively every year, and requiring the legislature to make a positive decision on what those priorities are, to setting up a system that automatically rewards another line item if, on the first hand, expectations of a different line item come in off target. So I think when you talk about, you use the term violating the process, what we're essentially doing, Senator, is we're removing the authority of the appropriations process, the appropriations committee, in favor of the benefit of a particular line item elsewhere in the budget.
Exactly.
Now, we heard, Senator, I know yesterday was a long day, but I think often yesterday we heard repeated conversation about respecting the appropriations process. Do you recall those yesterday? Respecting the analysis and the work that's put into the appropriations process from the appropriations committee. This bill is actually a direct opposition to respecting that process because it's going around that process.
It appears so.
That's kind of where we were at back in January with this conversation. And I think if I recall on the floor, and correct me if I'm wrong, there was what we just described competing with the idea that there was a desire by the body to look for more ways to put funding into the transportation line item, which for a number of reasons hasn't reached the targets that DESE has been looking for over recent years. You recall that?
I do.
And sometimes, are you familiar with the saying that the ends don't justify the means? The end goal of trying to find more dollars to fund the transportation line item, which I think most folks in this chamber agree is a priority, doesn't necessarily justify the violation of our appropriations process, which has been in place in the state of Missouri for more than a century. So I think that's kind of what we have here. But now, and again, this is your inquiry, Senator, I think we can actually advance the discussion to look at where are we today. So as everyone is overwhelmingly aware, we had a extended budgetary discussion yesterday about passage of budget bills that actually increase our state spending authority by 10%. And amongst that 10% increase are dramatic increases in spending authority for the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, dramatic increases for some of our largest government programs. And so as I look through House Bill 2, I see several things that would indicate that the need for such an amendment as this is even less than it was back in January.
Given what's happened at the federal level, and I think you're right. I mean, I think there's some CARES money there that's supposed to be coming in that direction.
To the tune of about $2 billion. So with the CARES Act money that we've approved, there should be significant availability to meet the obligations, not just of the transportation line item, but for a variety of things that may otherwise have been looking for funds prior to the epidemic.
Right.
Now, Senator, I think that you probably understand, I have some concerns about all the spending authority that was actually included in those budget bills, which was reflected in some of my votes. But at the same time, we have to make sure that we don't bind the hands of future legislatures to automatic triggers, I think, that incentivize bad estimates on the front side from one of our largest government departments.
And Senator, I think that pretty well does cover the concerns with respect to the Senator from Webster and also the Senator from Butler, who is trying to move this bill forward. I'm willing to terminate my inquiry right now. I think you've covered this very well. That was why I inquired of you, because I knew you had looked at the numbers. I knew you did have kind of a high-altitude view of what the impact of this would be, and I agree with that view, and I'm afraid I can't support the amendment. But thank you for taking my inquiry, Senator.
You bet, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion on the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 3, Senator from Butler.
Thank you, Mr. President. Speak on the amendment.
Proceed.
I'm in full support of the amendment.
Thank you, Senator. Senator from the 23rd.
To inquire from the Senator from Butler.
Senator from Butler, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, good morning. So the Senator from Barton and I just got done with an extended conversation about that. I guess a couple questions for you, since you just stood up and said that you support the amendment. You know, one of your passions that I've seen you talk about repeatedly on this floor have to do with transportation funding. And I admit that I'm surprised to hear you support an amendment that will remove appropriations flexibility in the budget for a line item that actually doesn't have anything to do with fixing roads and bridges. It has to do with an entirely different section. How do I reconcile, in my mind, the idea that we're going to circumvent the appropriations process on one hand, which will actually bind our hands in future legislatures to provide the kind of transportation funding that you're talking about? I mean, every dollar that goes back into the general revenue fund is theoretically something that we could prioritize for roads or bridges or other priorities of the state. Where am I wrong that I see a disconnect there?
As you know, I'm not a supporter of funding roads and bridges out of general revenue in the first place.
But we do that.
That's why we have, well, we do now. Now, if you want...
I didn't know the inquiry ended right there, Senator.
We both knew what that head movement meant, but those listening don't. Let me get back here. Let me get my composure. Well, first of all, a fuel user fee is the most fairest way there is to fund roads and bridges with. If you buy fuel, you buy it in Missouri. If you buy more, you pay a little more. If you buy less, pay less. If you don't buy fuel at all, you're still enjoying one of the greatest distribution systems called the road systems that we have. As far as the amendment that the Senator from Webster put forward, I see our schools really struggling with their transportation dollars. So
I guess my only other question for you, Senator, is do you feel like, I mean, this amendment is a referendum on the appropriations process. This amendment is basically saying, you know, the appropriations process doesn't do a good enough job making sure we're getting money into the transportation education line item, so we need to have an automatic trigger in there to make sure it gets a little bit extra cash when possible. So my question for you is, do you have a concern about the appropriations process that maybe you're not comfortable with the decisions being made?
No, I have tremendous respect for those who serve on the Appropriations Committee. Tremendous respect. But I think there was also a conversation from yesterday on one of the budget bills trying to legislate through the appropriations.
Oh, okay. Yes.
You remember that one?
I
there was
do
some
remember.
Discussion.
Was this? Did this
I
have
might have been
to do
eating
gaming?
A ham sandwich at that moment, but you know, I'm big on food. You know, we're coming up on 12 here, 45 minutes.
Now, I've been assured that we're going to get a lunch break today.
So if I'm mysteriously missing, you know, I'm having a ham sandwich or something. But... No, that's kind of where I'm at. But I just think it's a serious enough situation in the school transportation that we've been underfunding it for a long time. So.
Well, Senator, thank you for the inquiry, and I appreciate your input.
I hope that was enlightening.
Thank you. Mr. President.
Senator from the 23rd.
To inquire from the Senator from Johnson.
Senator from Johnson, do you yield to an inquiry? He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thanks, Senator. This is something that the body has already voted on. They voted it back in January. So my intention here, I see the Senator from Webster is watching me very carefully. My intention here is just to make sure the body understands what it is we'd be doing. And then I know there's a lot more things we want to move on this bill. I do wanted to get your feedback and see if I'm off base here. My concern is that for every automatic trigger we have in our code similar to this, we're taking a little bit of authority out of our Appropriations Committee's hands. And really, I see it as almost a remonstrance of the appropriations process, because if you don't feel like there's enough money getting into transportation, education transportation, then this is the kind of amendment that will circumvent the appropriations process and will take that power and control out of the appropriations staff each year. I think that's a bad thing. Am I wrong?
No, I agree with you, Senator. I know the senator from Webster has great intentions, and his district has a lot of rural school districts similar to mine. Transportation cost is a significant cost in school districts, especially in rural communities like the center from Webster and the center from and my district as well. However, I do believe that this kind of goes around our authority as appropriators, not only those members that sit on the Senate Appropriations Committee, but the House Budget Committee, and then just every senator and every state rep as well. Because, you know, at some point, you know, if we went down this path and we'd basically just take the consensus overall revenue estimate and plug it into a formula, and then it would just spit out everything that was going to go to each particular line item in the budget from all 13 budget bills. So I do have some concerns. I can't remember if I voted for this amendment or not when it first came up. Since then, I have had some additional conversations and some fellow senators as well as some of my constituents have brought some different ideas and their concerns to this as well. Do I think that transportation funding is a problem? Yes, I do.
Absolutely.
I do. And one of my school districts is one of the largest geographical school districts in the state of Missouri. But to go around the appropriations process, and I think that this system could be ripe for abuse, mainly because it could cause some of the school districts to overestimate how many students they have, because they know that if they overestimate, that anything that is extra or additional on top of that calculation automatically goes to the transportation line. And so indirectly, there could be some pressure and for those school districts to overestimate what exactly they're doing. And maybe there's a trigger or some sort of report that's filed every year that where we could see, you know, hey, if the amount, you know, every year is overestimated and there's transportation money going into this every year, we'd definitely see a pattern that maybe this process is being abused should this pass.
Senator, I just wanted to get a kind of a second opinion there. I really appreciate your input there, and I appreciate you taking my inquiry. And I think I've got a question for the senator from Webster real quick, and then I see the senator from Franklin would like to talk to me as well. So, Senator, thank you for the inquiry. I very much appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mr. President?
Senator from the 23rd.
To inquire from the senator from Webster?
Senator from Webster, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Senator. Senator, before I say anything else, I want to identify that I believe that your intentions here are very good. I believe that your intention is trying to address a priority that this body tries to tackle every single year, which is the transportation costs that are being incurred by our school districts around the state. And I think that the challenges for education transportation are present whether you're a rural district, whether you're a urban district, and everywhere in between. So I do think that your intentions are very good here. My question is specifically about your amendment, which I have here. And it creates the school transportation fund in the state treasury where the dollars would go if there is some money left over from the foundation formula. And I want to make sure I understand that in the way that it's distributed by transportation cost. Is that correct? So by the cost per pupil per district.
Right.
So in other words, if you are in a school district that has a higher cost per pupil for transportation, you're going to get more of the funds coming out of that than districts that have a lower cost per pupil, correct?
I think it's more distributed by mileage.
Okay. So, well, mileage, I think that's right. So mileage...
Rural areas, I mean, they might have to go 5 miles to pick up one person.
Yes.
Whereas the city area, metropolitan area, they have to go 5 blocks to pick up 50 people.
You're ahead of me. You're ahead of me, Senator. So in other words, for areas that have a higher cost per pupil, mileage, right? Because it, as you just said, it costs more to move a student 5 miles than it does to move a student 500 feet, which, technically, in the rural areas, you're going to have a higher cost per pupil. And this, the fund, the distributions from that fund are geared towards towards those that have a higher cost, which are inherently going to be more of the rural districts. Would you concur with that?
Somewhat, but you take, like, the Springfield School District's the largest one in the state, and so it requires them to have more buses, more this, more that, and everything just by that. So,
but it's a cost per pupil, if I'm reading your amendment correctly.
I think it's cost per mile, I believe. I'm not sure on that. I'd have to go back and check, Senator.
So for,
I knew that when this bill brought up. It's been too many bills ago.
If I'm reading the summary correctly, and I'll look at the... I want to make sure I'm looking at the table when I say this. It says that any funds deposited in the fund shall be paid to public school districts to provide transportation in addition to state aid currently provided for transportation based on the cost of pupil transportation in accordance with current law. So is that a cost per pupil, which would be influenced by the cost per the mileage, essentially? Well, they're thinking about that, Senator. So my concern there...
It has to be per pupil because, I mean, per mile, because you're... I mean, if you, you know, if you were a school of 150 kids, you would get nothing if it's by pupil. So it'd have to be for, by mile. I would... That would be my... loose interpretation, but it would only make sense. We have a lot of schools out there with 100 kids, 90 kids.
Just reading the actual language.
But they have to go that extra mile or extra 5 miles to pick up one child.
Right.
You know,
and there's
and
a
it's
higher
gonna
cost
basically
for that.
Cost the same if you've got, you know, if you're traveling 15 miles, it costs approximately the same to haul 50 kids, it would, whatever bus capacity would be, as it would if it hauled one.
All right, well, Senator...
Have a driver, still have to have a worn-out school bus, still going to have to gas, et cetera, like that.
Okay. Well, Senator, I appreciate the inquiry. I think I'm going to, while I'm reading that, and maybe we're waiting on that answer, I'll take care of, I think the Senator from Franklin wants to talk to me, so I'll take care of that. I might or might not come back to you.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Senator.
Yep, thank you.
Mr. President.
Senator from the 23rd.
To inquire from a motivated Senator from Franklin.
The motivated Senator from Franklin County, do you yield to an... inquiry from your colleague of the 23rd District.
Yes, I do, Mr. President.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, you seem very excited to...
I've been listening very intently, but I do not have this amendment. I don't know if it's been distributed. It was distributed yesterday. Someone cleaned my desk off, and so I obviously don't have a copy of that, so I would need a copy. But without the amendment and listening, I'm trying to follow along, so I had some questions and maybe... to see, conceptually, I think what the Senator from Webster is trying to do, I agree with, to try to put more funding in transportation. If I would have had my way and could wave a magic wand over the education, I wouldn't have fully funded the foundation formula. I would have put more money in the transportation line, would have been how I would have handled that.
Right.
Because obviously I come from a district that has more rural school districts. And we have underfunded transportation for some time now.
Right.
And literally, I believe that that's, that would be a better spin for my district, would be to put more funding there as opposed to fully funding the foundation. But that's not the direction we went, and so here's where we are. But I'm an advocate for more transportation funding. I don't know that this is the right mechanism. But I think your concerns as to skipping the appropriations process, I think those are valid. But... I would say, is there a way...
Senator, you can stop right there.
Yep.
If you just want to stop it, my concerns are valid and...
Your concern and that's it?
Just stop right there, Senator. No, I kid. Go ahead.
But I wonder if there is a way, because your concern, part of your concern is the appropriations going, you know, just automatically not going through the appropriations process, the money being set aside, and then the potential for people to exploit that. And increase their student enrollment in order to drive dollars that would ultimately end up in education. Is that that's kind of the basis of your concern?
That is the basis of the concern, yes.
The Is there a way, again, I mean, if you were amenable to it, would there be a way, though, to put a safeguard in there that would allow, if they were within a certain range or percentage? Because obviously it would be very difficult to, not only is it very difficult to predict the number of students that could enter or exit your school district during any particular calendar year, but what do you think would be a safe range where you could predict what you think your student enrollment is going to be? Curious.
So you're talking about the estimates from DESE.
Yeah.
Again, so right now there's a somewhat of a gateway when they're off by more than 5% that they actually lose a portion of that. But unfortunately, when I see where you're going, so I'm kind of thinking out loud here. When they exceed that gateway, the punishment, the penalty that they incur.
Negative. There's a negative.
There's a negative, But you still come out ahead, I guess is what, you see what I'm saying? You still come out ahead even with the penalty. So, forgive me because I'm kind of thinking out loud. If we could strengthen that gateway and maybe shrink the gateway a little bit to discourage them from having any benefit to really getting the estimates to be out of control, which I don't, and that wasn't the intent of the senator from Webster, I don't think. The senator from Webster was not intending to have school districts purposely,
right?
You know,
that could be,
but that could happen.
Well, believe me, obviously, you know, administrator or superintendents, obviously, they're very creative in figuring out how to fill budgets, and if that is something that could potentially be exploited, believe me, you know, I would be concerned that that would be a problem because, again.
And I'm just thinking out loud, but what about this? If we had, and I know the Senator from Webster is watching me, what if we had a system where if the estimates are off by more than 3%, I'm just using a number, more than 3%, then they would only 50% of the leftover funds would go into the transportation fund. And then
the closer they get, the better
the estimate, the more money they get.
If
it's over 5%, none of the money will go into the fund. You see what I'm saying? So if they get really off, maybe 5% is not the number, but maybe 10%.
Well, I I'm an advocate for transportation funding. So, you know, whether or not I do think trying to figure out a way that we make sure that we don't have people padding numbers in order to try to drive transportation dollars, while I would like to drive transportation dollars out of the formula
right.
Myself. I just, you know, somewhat agree. I also somewhat agree with the senator from Webster, and maybe there is a marriage that could occur.
Yeah, there's a small gate in there that talks that says if any year in which state transportation aid reaches 75% of the total allowable cost, this section won't apply. So in other words, if we get to the point to where we're funding transportation at 75% or more, none of this happens.
None of it, which that's we're a long way from that.
We're a long way for that, and that doesn't address the estimates per se.
Right.
So if we
right.
could if we could put a gate in there that simply says, if and I'm thinking out loud, if you put a gate in there, just said, hey, if your estimate is too far off, you're not going to be able to benefit from this section. Inherently, that's what I'm thinking. So maybe why don't I have a conversation with the senator from Webster real quick?
I appreciate it. It was helpful for me to get the amendment or the bill in my hands, but as I listened, that's why I wanted to inquire with you and try to offer maybe some options.
Yep.
So thank you,
agree.
Senator.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. President?
Senator from the 23rd.
May I inquire from Senator from Webster?
Senator from Webster, do you yield?
Yeah. Excuse me. Yes, I do.
He does. Proceed.
Hey, Senator, thank you for the inquiry. I'm sure you were listening to my conversation with the senator from Franklin, who was just trying to look for a way, and I'm very open to this. There's already a provision in the amendment that says if we ever get to the point of funding transportation by 75%, none of this happens. So that's the first thing. So if we, and that's designed so that if we ever get to 100% transportation funding, then it's not going to put extra money into the system.
Right.
That was the intent of the amendment. The only, and that's good. The only failing is that doesn't, well, as long as we're under 75%, it doesn't address the possibility that estimates, which to now have been very, very good, may have some incentive to drift a little bit higher. So what if there's already a, and I'm, forgive me because I'm kind of talking through this, there's already a gate where if the estimates from DESE come in more than 5% off, There's a penalty provision that reduces of the money that they can get. Unfortunately, because that penalty was not designed with this kind of situation in mind, and it really hasn't been used because there's no motivation to go higher or lower.
But that does have to be reviewed by the department.
It has to be reviewed by the department. What about if we simply strengthened that gate and just said, hey, if your estimates are more than 5% high all of a sudden, then you don't get the benefits of this section. That'll create a gate to ensure that DESE doesn't have any motivation to go above 5% high or low, but we're worried about high. So it keeps our estimates within a reasonable range. And that could be added, I think, as pretty simply as far as some language on here. That would just be an extra protection.
I don't know if the needs are. Senator, you serve on appropriations with myself and others, and we approve the transportation budget in there. Hmm? And if you've seen excess money going to that, wouldn't that be a place to say, hey, where'd this come from? This, you know, you're looking at transportation budget and they're in appropriations, you know.
Well, so the gap, per se, is what we're looking at in transportation is the estimate for the foundation formula. So when we're, and you and I have had the sometimes difficult experience of all those spreadsheets that we get in these big packets of paper, and in amongst those spreadsheets are the actual numbers from the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education saying, this is what our estimate on the foundation formula ought to be.
Right, and
We don't have, in that process, a viable mechanism to say, what's going into, what are all the factors, what was the review, you know, what was the look back from last year as far as how far off we were. At least in the two years I've, and you've been on there longer, that hasn't been a level that is reasonably gotten to in that appropriations process. Generally, my understanding is that it comes up, we look at the number, we make a decision about whether or not we can reach that number with our current budgetary constraints, and if we can, I think we're generally pretty good about appropriating that number. I'm talking about the foundation formula. The next line item you come to is then the transportation number, which is typically after the foundation formula, and then we make a decision based on maybe what we spend in that first one or maybe what we're spending later on, how much we feel we can meet towards the transportation line item. There are so many factors. I think it would be difficult to get into the conversation that you're wondering about, and it's not a conversation that I have seen take place in the past couple of years. I think you could probably just solve it by just creating a discouraging factor if the estimates get out of control as a protection mechanism from the possibility of wayward estimates. That's what the senator from Franklin and I were talking about. I didn't know what. But maybe you thought about something like that.
I would not be in favor of that. I'd like to just claim it. And we got to pay our bills.
Okay.
We're not paying our bills. We're paying a third of what we actually owe those folks.
Okay. Well, Senator, again, I was just looking for some ideas. I just started a conversation. I appreciate the inquiry.
Okay. Right. And we do. Of course, he won't be here next year, but the senator from Barton, he sits on the Education Committee that heard this first. I mean, it's been through the Education Committee. It's been through the House. Been through the Senate, it's been the House Education Committee, and it's up on the calendar on the floor in the House right now.
Okay. Well, Senator, I sure appreciate the feedback.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. President?
Senator from the 23rd.
May I inquire from the Senator from Clay?
Senator from Clay County, do you yield to an inquiry?
Thank you.
She does. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you for the inquiry, Senator. I just wanted to get your perspective on something.
Sure.
We've been talking about this amendment. You have long advocated for additional funding in the transportation line item and the foundation formula. So I just want to get your perspective on something, and that is how the funds would be distributed from this transportation fund. Now, right now, as I'm reading the amendment, the funds would be distributed in a manner consistent with the pupil cost of transportation. In other words, if you live in an area that has high transportation costs per student, you're going to get more from this fund than areas that have low transportation costs per student. My concern, as I'm kind of thinking through this, if we're going to have such a fund, I would want the funds to be distributed evenly, maybe based on student population versus cost per pupil. I live in a suburban district.
Would you mind clarifying that distinction?
Sure. So if we set up a, if we have a fund that's going to reimburse school districts based on a number of factors, it may actually, I don't know if skew is the right word for it, but it may favor certain districts over another. And I want to make sure that if we have any kind of state fund, that we're distributing funds from that fund in the fairest way possible. Now, in the case of the transportation fund that's under consideration from this amendment, funds would be distributed based on a cost per pupil basis. In other words, if you had a high cost transportation cost per pupil, you're going to get more from this fund than if you have a low transportation cost per pupil. Well, as you know, and as I'm aware, I'm kind of, my district, and I think your district, is kind of in the middle of that range. You know, I have a lot of suburban areas. I've got, I don't really have urban, but I'm kind of suburban with a little tiny bit of rural. And I from what I know of your district, you're kind of in that same realm. You have suburban areas a little bit. So we're kind of in the middle of that scale. If I have a rural district with a high number of cost, a high cost per pupil for transportation, I stand as that school district to benefit a lot more from such a fund than if I'm an urban district that has a relatively low cost per pupil, because in an urban area you don't have to move very far to transport the student. Am I making sense so far?
Yeah, and I guess it's just maybe as an individual senator's opinion what's fair, because I think probably our colleagues from more rural areas where they've had a really difficult time affording to bus students, and we've talked a few times about the logical decision they made was to send kids to school for 4 days. So from, you know, I think they have a very valid position that they'd like to see
more
the
funding.
Bill, yeah, as or the amendment as written, because they're having pretty serious problems getting kids to school on the fifth day.
So I haven't heard any feedback from any of our urban colleagues, and I'd be curious some of our urban colleagues are all right with a fund that's going to distribute foundation formula dollars that came from the original estimates in a manner that really benefits the rural districts over those urban districts. So I haven't heard that. Maybe that's not a concern.
I think you raise valid points about the budgeting process, and I think those concerns are valid. I think that by agreeing to this legislation, we as a legislature are affirming our commitment. And in some ways, it's not like we've abdicated our responsibility to appropriate money. We are just affirming that this is how we've decided to spend those dollars. So in some ways, the legislature still has full authority and decision-making over that process, and we're doing it now.
Senator, I just wanted to get your quick opinion on that, and I sure appreciate you sharing, and thank you for the inquiry.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion on the adoption motion offered by the Senator from Webster County. Hearing none, Senator, you are recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I renew my motion.
Senator from Webster County renews his motion that Senate Amendment Number 3 for the Senate substitute, the Senate committee substitute for House Bill 1963 be adopted. As many in favor of that motion shall prevail, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
No.
The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have adopted Senate Amendment Number 3. We are back on the adoption of the Senate substitute offered by the Senator from Butler County, Senator from Dallas.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have an amendment.
Please send your amendment forward.
The amendment has been distributed, and I would request a waiver of the reading.
Hearing no objection, a waiver of the reading shall be granted. Senator, would you care to move for the adoption of the amendment, and then feel free to explain it?
Yes, Mr. President. I move for the adoption of the amendment. This amendment is a portion of Senate Bill 779 dealing with residual market entities. This passed out of insurance and banking 6-0. It has zero physical note. Nobody testified against the bill. This is just the portion of that bill dealing with the auto insurance. Residual markets are those that where people go to get high-risk insurance, and this is going to kind of cut out the middleman so they don't have to go through two companies to get the insurance. This is going to streamline the process. It will also put them under a subject them to regulation by the Department of Commerce and Insurance, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
The senator from Dallas County has moved for the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 4 for the Senate Committee Substitute to House Bill 1963. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Hearing none, Senator, you are recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I renew my motion.
Senator from Dallas County renews her motion that Senate Amendment Number 4 to the Senate Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute to House Bill 1963 be adopted. All those who are in favor of that motion signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have adopted Senate Amendment Number 4. We are back on the adoption of the Senate Substitute. Senator from the 20th District.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have an amendment. It ends in 06S. It has been distributed for a waiver of the reading and move for its adoption.
Thank you, Senator. Please send your amendment forward. Hearing no objection, a waiver of the reading shall be granted. You've moved for its adoption, Senator. Would you care to explain your amendment?
Yes. The underlying bill has a section to address the issue with property that's been left at salvage yards, salvage pools. And so the language omitted those that dismantle, those businesses that take salvage property for dismantling it. So this just adds them making sure that we're including those businesses as well.
The senator from the 20th has moved for the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 5. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from Butler County.
Thank you, Mr. President. I inquire the senator from the 20th.
Senator from the 20th, do you yield?
Yes.
He does. Proceed.
Okay, this is a salvage dealer and dismantling amendment,
yes.
06S?
Yes.
Okay. Good amendment. Full support.
Thank you.
Further discussion on the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 5, Senator from the 24th District.
May I inquire of the Senator from the 20th?
Senator from the 20th, do you yield?
Yes.
He does. Proceed.
Would you explain to me, I was working on an amendment myself. Would you explain to me what this amendment does?
So the underlying bill has a section related to salvage pools, but by that it doesn't include those businesses that salvage the vehicle and then dismantle it and then sell the parts. And there's quite a few in the state of Missouri that do that. And so the underlying language, by not specifically mentioning them, they were being left out.
And being left out of what does the underlying language have in it that those what my dad and grandpa used to have a junkyard, a salvage yard.
So the underlying bill, which passed, the underlying bill basically deals with the issue where there's abandoned property. So if a person has a vehicle that's sitting on a salvage pool or at a salvage dismantling facility, and that person has taken the insurance claim, but they decided that they want to keep the vehicle, but they decide that they don't want to go pick up the vehicle. What happens is that these salvage yards end up with these vehicles for and it just occupies their space, and they have a growing they end up not being able to deal with the property. So that language that's in the underlying bill says that it walks through a framework for them to seek to notify the individual through
notify
certified,
the owner?
Yeah, find the owner and notify the owner through certified mail to make sure that they receive the notice, and then that they within an additional 30 days upon receipt, then they will submit for a title change from the Department of Revenue, and then that way they can take the title of the vehicle and then dismantle it. Or then take ownership in the salvage pool.
And within that 30-day period, just so I'm clear, if the owner of the vehicle, for example, lives out of town, and I think I've spoken about this in the past on the floor, lives out of town and just calls and says, yes, we're going to come get that vehicle, and we're going to pay whatever we need to for the fee for, in essence, storing that vehicle there. Does the owner of the salvage yard or the business that you're talking about still have the right to destroy it after 30 days?
No.
So it's just even a phone call is sufficient, or is there something spelled out about what needs to be done in order for that vehicle not to be destroyed?
Yeah, it's spelled out. They have to submit it to the Department of Revenue, and then they would go through that whole process that they have of determining if there's a dispute, if the person still wants the vehicle or not, and then after that 30-day period of time, if there's no dispute, and the person has been notified and there's no dispute, then the application granted.
All right. So talk to me for a moment about the no dispute portion, because if you're in an accident, your vehicle was towed and it was towed to a salvage yard, and then you are not there and it's kept there within this 30-day framework or however long it's kept there, and you don't want to pay the storage charge, if you will, or you cannot pay, what happens then with the vehicle? Because it's not going to be released to you if you have a debt to the salvage yard that has been storing your vehicle, right? Even though it was never your intention for it to be stored there, it just happens to be where it was towed after the accident. You might be in the hospital for 15 or 30 days, right?
Right. That's why if you're in the hospital, then you're not going to receive the certified mail.
So your car is going to be destroyed.
What I'm saying is that they have to have certified receipt of the mail.
So they have to have proof. Right.
Before they submit it for the title.
Right. So that's important. So the 30 days doesn't start until you've received, you, the owner of the vehicle, have received notification.
Yes.
And if you've received notification and you can't get to it within 30 days, or you can, but you can't pay the storage fees.
Just to be clear, this is, so if the vehicle has been sitting there for 30 days, then the mail is sent, and then upon receipt, then there's an additional 30 days, and before they can submit that.
Okay, so the vehicle then has been sitting there for 60 days.
Yes,
at least. My question is, and so I think that seems to be a generous amount of time, even if the person who was in the accident died as a result of that accident. I would hope that the family members could find that vehicle, which may not always be the case.
Yeah.
You understand that, right?
Yeah.
But the salvage yard can't do anything if the next of kin, if somebody hasn't signed on behalf of the deceased victim.
Right.
Okay, so then that vehicle needs to be there until somebody does figure out where it is and has an opportunity to do something about it. But if it's been sitting there for 60, 90, however long that process takes, my question to you is, what if the family says, yes, we want the vehicle back, but we didn't even know it was there, and now you're telling us we owe 60, 30, 90 days worth of storage fees. That's the dispute you're talking about? And how does that get, how does that dispute get?
So this bill does not go into that existing scenario. This simply deals with, because if somebody does have a vehicle that they're not paying those fees and it's sitting there, then the fees are just going to continue to go up. And the salvage pool obviously has expenses. They want the vehicle off their property. But as you know, what is happening across the board is that people are determining that the vehicle is not worth the vehicle is clearly not worth it. So they've taken the insurance claim money. They decided they don't want the vehicle, and then they eventually, after a long period of time, after they track down the owner and get get the information, they're at some point either have to get it back to the owner or decide to bill them in some way. But this just streamlines that process so that they're not sitting with, as they are today, with hundreds and hundreds of vehicles on their lots with no one that wants to claim these properties.
Right. These are difficult situations. I just want to make sure that we've given every opportunity for the owner of the vehicle, because if that's somebody who is, lower income, unable to afford those fees, then does that person also end up losing his or her vehicle? And that's...
Yeah, and I think if somebody was in that situation, they wanted to keep the vehicle, this would not apply to them, because they would be communicating that they want the vehicle.
Right. So, the question is, can they afford it?
That's the current situation, is someone who wants the vehicle is then in a discussion on paying those fees and when they can take claim of the vehicle.
Yeah. All right. Well,
this amendment simply is adding those other the one.
Right. And would you read the other categories that it adds?
So it's a salvage dealer and dismantler, which is the, like, there's companies that, so the salvage pools, the car is there for people to come either auction, purchase it, and the dismantlers obviously either take the property, and if it's not worth selling, they're the ones that would take it and scrap it or sell the parts.
Right. And can I ask who brought you this amendment, who asked you to bring this forward to include this group?
So the people that represent that group who notified me, and some of them are constituents in my district. That they represent those people that represent this salvage dealers and dismantlers, who pointed out that they were not being included in this language.
Okay, I got it. Thank you for the inquiry. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion on the adoption motion offered by the Senator from the 20th? Hearing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
Senator from the 20th renews his motion that Senate Amendment Number 5 for the Senate substitute, the Senate Committee substitute for House Bill 1963 be adopted. As many of the opinion of that motion shall prevail, signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have adopted Senate Amendment Number 5. We are back on the adoption of the Senate substitute. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? I'm sorry. Senator from the 2nd.
I'm to inquire of the senator from Shelby.
Senator from Shelby, do you yield to an inquiry?
I do.
She does. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, I knew you had dropped an amendment, and I have too. I wanted, if you were still planning on offering that amendment, I didn't want this bill to get closed on before you did so. Were you standing just now to offer an amendment?
Yes, I was.
Okay. Well, thank you for the inquiry, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion, the Senator from Shelby County.
I have an amendment.
Please send your amendment forward.
And I'll just explain it. It's pretty simple.
Are you seeking a waiver of the reading then, Senator?
Oh, yes. Yes, I am.
Great. Hearing no objection, a waiver of the reading shall be granted. Senator, would you care to move for its adoption and then feel free to explain it?
Yes, I move for the adoption of my amendment. It's a simple explanation. I know that we're talking about the Hyperloop in this bill. I'm pretty skeptical of the Hyperloop. On the other side of it, I know there's people who think that it's a good thing, and possibly someday it will be a good thing. But particularly right now, when I look at the condition of I-70, I've heard conversation about it being constructed along I-70, and I think that we need truck lanes on I-70. So if we were to take part of the property to construct the Hyperloop, then that's going to cut down on the land that's available to construct truck lanes. So the amendment basically says, under no circumstance shall a public right-of-way necessary for the expansion of I-70 be materially impeded by or transferred to a public-private partnership for the purpose of constructing a tube transport system. You know, a lot of our products move by truck, and they come across I-70 both directions, coming from all over the United States. And if you've driven on I-70 very much, a lot of people try to avoid it, but there's just a ton of truck traffic. And the cost for constructing those lanes is going to be immense. I think everyone understands that. It's going to take a lot of money to do that. And I'm just opposed to the idea of taking part of the property from I-70 and trying to finance something that I feel maybe it'll be a good idea in the future, but if it's going to be a good idea, I think that it should be constructed away from I-70, some other location.
Oh. The senator from Shelby has moved for the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 6 for the Senate Substitute, Senate Committee Substitute to House Bill 1963. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Hearing none, Senator, you are recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
Senator from Shelby renews her motion that Senate Amendment Number 6 to the Senate Substitute, Senate Committee Substitute to House Bill 1963 be adopted. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have adopted Senate Amendment Number 6. We are back on the adoption motion for the Senate Substitute. Does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from the 24th.
Mr. President, I have an amendment. It has been distributed. I move for a waiver of the reading, and I move for its adoption.
Thank you, Senator. Send your amendment forward. Hearing no objection, a waiver of the reading shall be granted. You've moved for its adoption. Would you care to explain your amendment?
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. It's pretty straightforward and simple. I think this is not the time to be giving additional tax breaks to airplane owners. So I'm just removing the language on page 7 that changed the amount of hours that over which a person would get put off their property taxes to 200. I'm putting that back to 50 to the original language that we had. So once you've traveled more than 50 hours in your plane, you will be responsible for paying those taxes. And with that, I renew my motion, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
The senator from the 24th has moved for the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 7. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. To inquire from the senator from the 24th.
Senator from the 24th, do you yield? She does. Proceed.
Sorry, Senator. I'm having a little bit of technical difficulty here, but there we go. There we go. I just rigged it. I just rigged my microphone, so I'm all set. I was asking some questions about this amendment earlier, so thank you for your inquiry and your amendment. I'm trying to. Do you have any background on where this bill came from? This is the first really that I've heard of this bill, and I'm trying to. You and I have had some brief conversations about personal property tax in general sense. I didn't even know there was an exemption for aircraft in the state code. Were you aware of that?
Well, apparently this something like this was on at least moving through the process in 2016. It never made it all the way through the process. And that's why there is, because I went over and asked about a fiscal note, and because I wanted to find out that information, especially since this had moved through the House. So that was my inquiry off of the floor, and I didn't remember it from 2016 because it didn't, I don't even know if it made it to the floor. But yeah, so that's the history. And no, of course not. I didn't realize that.
I have not gotten any phone calls from anyone in my district that owns a private airplane saying that they're looking for more flexibility and exempt status for their private aircraft. Have you gotten any of those phone calls?
No, but when I was flying up here the other day, I'm just kidding, that was a joke, just so you're clear. No, I don't. I have not heard from any plane owners that this has been a problem.
So here's my concern about this situation. And you and I have briefly discussed personal property tax before. Missouri has one of the highest rates of personal property tax in the country.
Well, but we have low rates of other kinds of taxes, so...
But for that one, and primarily, this personal property taxes affect lower and working class households because they're paying a high rate on something that a lot of them have, which are vehicles that they're using to get to work and whatever. So if we're going to have a discussion about personal property taxes, and if we're going to have a discussion about moving, maybe moving away from personal property taxes or not, I feel like we should be looking at those citizens that are paying the greatest burden of personal property tax, which are those lower income households.
Right.
Would you agree or disagree with that?
I agree, and I have not seen in those people's homes a garage for their planes. So.
Exactly. Ownership of an airplane is typically not something you see in working in lower class households. You concur with that assessment?
I agree that most working class people, most regular families in the state of Missouri do not own airplanes.
And yet at least in my district, the feedback I've gotten back from my constituents is a lot of folks are being harmed and they've got concerns about this personal property tax, but never in the context of owning an airplane.
Right.
So I concur with where you're going on an amendment that has to do with expanding an exemption for something that very few people own.
Right.
And again, I'm glad that they own it. I really am. I'm glad that they own it. And in a perfect world, I'd get rid of personal property tax for everybody.
You might
disagree with that, but that's kind of where I'm coming from.
Sure.
But I think that to have a conversation exempting aircraft, before we've had a really honest discussion about exempting maybe personal property on the first $10,000, and I'm just throwing out numbers, but the personal property taxes that are affecting far more homes in this state, I think maybe that's a little bit premature, which is kind of the genesis of your amendment, unless I've completely misunderstood.
No, absolutely.
Okay. Well, Senator, I appreciate the inquiry. I just wanted to make that point. So thank you
very
much.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion on the adoption motion offered by the Senator of the 24th District. Senator from the 23rd.
Mr. President, may I inquire the Senator from the 2nd?
Senator from the 2nd, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
So, Senator, it is unusual. Now, this, interestingly enough, this exemption would actually lower personal property tax revenues in the state of Missouri because somebody owns a plane. And
right.
somebody
right.
owns a plane that is between 80 and 200 or 50 and 200 hours. So somebody is actually going to get a tax cut from this particular amendment. I don't know who those people are. I don't know how many of them there are. There's probably not many, but somebody's going to get a tax cut on this. And I guess I think there one of the biggest priorities that I had coming into the session was to have a conversation about personal property tax. I did not think the first conversation we were going to have about personal property tax was going to be about airplanes.
Airplanes, yes.
Because most people don't have airplanes, and
most people are
paying personal property tax on their vehicles.
Right.
Believe it or not, Senator, there is... there's legislation that has been filed and actually voted out of committee that I've carried that would move the state of Missouri away from personal property tax as an institution of revenue.
Right.
Interestingly enough, there was a similar bill that was filed by the former senator of the 7th District that would exempt certain property from personal property tax, but didn't go as far as mine, which probably not surprising.
Right.
Probably not surprising. But the senator from the 7th actually had, it was an SJR that would eliminate personal property tax for vehicles over 10 years of age.
10, okay.
Now, my bill would eliminate personal property tax for all vehicles.
All vehicles.
Because, as you've probably heard me
all
before...
All vehicles or everything?
I'm sorry, all vehicles...
Yeah, not just vehicles, and it would eliminate personal property taxes on everything.
Trailers.
Yeah.
RVs. And If you'll indulge me, Senator, I want to go back a couple years. You recall when we passed the big income tax bill a couple years ago?
We're having issues here, Senator.
See, I'm having a lot of trouble with this microphone. But a couple years ago, when we passed House Bill 2540, which was the tax cut bill, after session was over, we went back to our district, and I talked a lot about cutting the income tax and why that I felt that was important. And interestingly enough, The most common feedback I got from people that I talked to was, thank you for cutting our income taxes, but can you do something about personal property taxes?
Yes, we get a lot of complaints about personal property taxes. I think there's, and I understand that certain political subdivisions are dependent on personal property taxes for revenue, but I believe that people, our constituents, taxpayers of the state of Missouri, find personal property taxes uniquely insulting. Because think about it. We pay taxes on our income, and then we buy things, cars, what have you, with our after-tax income.
That's right.
In most cases, you know. And then we have to pay government more taxes for the privilege of continuing to own that thing.
That's right.
That we bought with after-tax income. And then in between, we pay sales tax for that same item. So we're not only being double taxed when we pay sales tax, but then we're being
endlessly taxed,
triple taxed,
and quadruple
every year,
yes.
For the rest of our lives, of our ownership of that particular item. Now, I will just say here in defense of what representative filed this, I believe it was Sharp. In defense of what Representative Sharp is doing here, I would point out that this particular reduction in the personal property tax, it is for airplanes over to, and I agree, of course, people who own airplanes are more affluent than the general population, no question. But I point out a couple things. Many businesses do use, I would say the majority of general aviation aircraft are owned by business people for business purposes.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I would also point out that this is on aircraft that are at least 25 years old. That's a pretty old plane. And so it's not a...
Oh, brand. I'm sorry. This is for only planes that are over 25 years of age?
It's only planes that are over 25 years old.
So it's for planes that are over 25 years of age and are being flown between 50 and 200 hours.
That's right.
How many of those planes could there be?
I don't think there are that many. And I would also say one other thing. I mean, as most members of this body know, I am a pilot myself. The more you fly, the safer pilot you are.
That's correct.
That really is the case. In fact, the great majority of general aviation aircraft accidents occur when pilots have fewer than 500 hours. Now, as a pilot who right now has 230 hours, that statistic gives me quite a bit of pause. So the thing, I've been aware of this exemption for, it's often referred to as the antique aircraft, exemption or the lower rate of taxes on antique aircraft. I've been aware of that for some time. This, by the way, the representative's amendment wouldn't benefit me in any way financially. This would not apply to me. But it always occurred to me the tax incentive for flying under 50 hours per year is that aspect of this particular, regardless of the underlying, the merits of the underlying exemption, the limitation to 50 hours, I always thought was a little bit of a safety concern. So people who are buying older aircraft and flying under 50 hours, that's a small number. And you're right, the number between 50 and 200 hours a year is not a with older aircraft 25 years or older. That's probably not a large number of people.
So, Senator, here's.
Did we ever figure out what the fiscal note on this bill was?
We did not.
Okay.
I don't know. Although I will say the senator from the 24th said that she inquired about a fiscal note, but she didn't say what that was. But here's what I'm thinking. I think this might be a good time to have a conversation about personal property taxes in Missouri. And I've got a bill that was voted out of committee. You voted for it.
I voted for it.
Where It talks about...
You know, it's sometimes said not to be senatorial to refer to how people voted on things, but
I apologize.
No, but I don't agree. I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that at all. Okay. I'm always happy. I'm perfectly happy when people say, by the way, you voted for that. Sometimes it reminds me.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
You know, because you know how it is. We have so many committees. And
that's right.
This has been such a crazy session with a six-week gap in the middle of it. I'm glad you reminded me I voted for that because I liked your bill. And
that's right.
I'm glad I made that executive session so that I could vote for that bill. But I think you want to have a broader discussion about sales tax or about personal property tax in general.
They're drafting this now, so if you'll indulge me, Senator, I'd like to kind of walk through what I'm thinking.
Sure.
So far. So, first of all, I had an SJR, which was SJR 44, if I'm not mistaken. Is 44 was the right number? I'm looking at my staff. I think it's 44. SJR 54, this obviously is not an SJR, which I'll get to in a second, but SJR 44 would have put to a vote of the people whether or not personal property tax will continue to be levied and taxed. Personal property will be levied on and taxed in the state of Missouri. It would have been a constitutional amendment. The beauty of this amendment about the taxation of limited flight hour aircraft, it is demonstrated to me that such an SJR could actually be executed via an amendment to our state statute.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
By a slightly different angle. You see, I was always of the opinion that in order to completely get rid of a personal property tax, you had to go through a constitutional amendment. But we can actually get to the end goals of what SJR 44 was trying to do by essentially imitating what Representative Sharp has done in his limited flight hour aircraft amendment.
Right.
So there were actually, and this was one of two SJRs that came before the Ways and Means Committee. One was my SJR that would have eliminated personal property tax on all personal property. And then two, there was an SJR from the former senator from the 7th that would have eliminated all personal property tax on items over 10 years of age.
Sure.
So there was a difference there. So what I'm thinking of doing, because we have an idea of the fiscal cost, we have the idea we've allowed for some public discussion. What I think I'd like to do, and I'm having this drafted, is an amendment that would, for vehicles right in the middle, over 5 years of age, it would reduce the personal property assessment rate from 33% down to 10%.
Okay.
So it's actually closer to the senator from the 7th bill than it is to mine, because mine gets rid of everything.
This just lowers
the rate. This would just lower the rate of assessment on vehicles or on personal property over 5 years from 33% to 10%. So to make sure I'm being clear, when you go to pay personal property tax on your vehicle or your trailer or your boat, the market value is multiplied by a similar multiple of what your regular real estate property is multiplied, but it's a very high multiple in the case of personal property taxes, 33%. That multiple is what makes the rate of personal property tax so high in Missouri relative to the few number of states that have personal properties to tax elsewhere in the country. So instead of just eliminating outright personal property tax via a constitutional amendment, which we probably are probably not going to get to, I would guess, here in the next 8 days of session.
You don't think we're going to TFP your JR?
We may not even get to that discussion. But here we have been presented with an opportunity
to
reduce personal property, which is overwhelmingly the most unpopular tax, at least in my experience and the feedback I get from my constituents, most unpopular tax in the state, by reducing the assessment for at least vehicles over 5 years.
Are there any popular taxes?
They're not in my book. Not in my book, but there are. So there seem to be degrees of unpopular.
Unpopularness. Okay. Yes.
So there is a way to contrast that. So I think that.
This just occurred to me. The tax collectors from the biblical age, what were they collecting taxes on? Were they taxing income? Were they taxing property? Or were they taxing goods? They were probably.
Good question. I feel like I'm inadequate here.
The tax collectors, of course, were also hated because they were collaborators with the Romans. But
that's
what
right.
were they taxing?
I thought it was property. Wasn't it property?
I don't know. Maybe they were just head taxing a certain amount per person, per citizen.
You know, there's an interesting discussion about what to tax. There are some there are preferences for sales tax, and each of these different forms of taxation have different advantages and disadvantages, I would say.
Right.
For example, in the case of sales tax, the advantage and the thought process for, say, a national consumption tax is that it's a voluntary tax.
Right.
So you choose whether or not you're going to pay for the tax by what you choose to what you choose to purchase, correct?
Right.
So it's a voluntary tax. So if you don't want to pay the tax,
right,
you just don't have to buy anything.
Right.
Now, that may not be feasible in reality, but it's still a voluntary tax.
Yes.
The bad part, the downside of a consumption tax is as a percentage of income, which sometimes correlates to wealth, sometimes, not all times, typically lower and middle income households pay a higher percentage of their overall income in sales taxes than do higher incomes. So it's a regressive tax in a sense. And so some folks have some resistance or some hesitancy about broad sweeping sales taxes because of the regressive nature of that. Then, of course, there's income taxes.
Income tax. Yeah.
Which I have routinely been against for a couple reasons. One, there's an old saying, Senator, that whatever you tax, you discourage.
That's right.
And a tax on income is literally a tax on production. So if we want our country, our citizens, our economies, our communities to be more productive, we shouldn't tax them or penalize them for such production.
Right. It was Justice Marshall who famously said the power to it's often quoted as the power to tax is the power to destroy. The word was involves. The power to tax involves the power to destroy.
Right.
Senator for the 24th.
Mr. President.
Oh, I'm sorry. Three senators on the floor. Senator from the 24th.
Mr. President, even though I think this amendment is important, I'm not going to let it be used for filibuster efforts on this, so I'm going to withdraw the amendment.
Madam Secretary, please send the amendment back. We are back on the adoption of the Senate substitute. Senator from the 23rd.
From the Senator from the 2nd.
Senator from the 2nd, do you yield?
I do. Thank
he does. Proceed.
So, Senator, we're back.
I don't think you meant to use this as a filibuster. I think what you were you having your amended drafted as an amendment to the amendment, right?
I was having my amendment drafted. Now, without the underlying amendment, I'll need that redrafted to the sub.
Yeah.
But we're going to get to this discussion one way or the other.
Yeah, because that's what I thought we were doing, and that's why you didn't let the senator from, you know, the 24th close is that
correct.
You were drafting an amendment to her amendment.
Correct.
You know, in all honesty, yes. If her amendment were still on the floor, I would probably just amend it to allow these antique aircraft pilots a little more time.
Right.
You know, I think 50 hours a year is a little on the low side for safety reasons. If it were, you know, 100, I think that, you know, would be a nice. I would imagine that's what the representative had in mind when he wrote this bill. But again, I don't have a strong,
right,
you know, a strong feeling one way or the other. But I imagine that this is probably, you know, it's funny too. It's I guess there's this idea that general aviation aircraft pilots are very wealthy people. Most of probably the majority of pilots that I know and I meet, they are retired airline pilots or retired military pilots, airline pilots make good money, but they're not fabulously wealthy people, and they tend to buy very, very old planes. Some of them planes that are older than I am, and certainly a used Piper Cub is not a rich person's purchase.
Right.
But in any case, the senator withdrew that amendment.
We were talking about income taxes.
Oh, I got an answer to my question that I asked earlier.
Oh, okay.
A friend of mine who's apparently listening in said that the Romans apparently taxed land and livestock.
Oh, property.
So property.
That was right.
They were, land, real property,
land,
and
real
livestock,
property.
And personal
livestock.
Property.
That's personal property.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Okay. Well, that that answers that question.
So the hated tax collectors in the book of Matthew, including Matthew himself, were personal property taxers.
You know, Senator, I just had a thought, and I think that maybe this is because of for past actions on the floor. I want to make. I'm not filibustering.
No, you're getting a bill. You're getting an amendment prepared.
If we were filibustering this bill, we probably wouldn't allow it for the close of the Senator from Webster's amendment. So I'm not filibustering this bill, and I want to make sure that nobody misunderstands that. We're doing a couple things here. One, there are a ton of amendments on this bill.
There are.
It is one of the so-called omnibus bills, and I want to make sure we're taking the time to go through all of this stuff. And actually, we're finding out things that we didn't know, about private aircraft.
I had no idea.
I had no idea this was
in here.
And at the same time,
you have policy that you'd like
absolutely
to advance. And, you know, if you were, you're having an amendment drafted. If you were filibustering, you could be reading out of a phone book or something.
This is not going to be an amendment that I offer and then filibuster just to continue delaying. This is an amendment you want to
get it done.
That I'm going to look for not just a vote, but a roll call vote. And the reason I'm going to look for a roll call vote is because this has been one of my major priorities to try to make some progress on personal property taxes. And it is something that has been, I have gotten overwhelming amounts of support from my constituents, actually not just from my constituents, but from constituents around the state. And it's a very high level of tax. And I think that for something that has been so harmful for so many low-income and middle-income households, I think that, you know, we should see where the body stands. And I can assure the body, once this amendment is drafted, I'm not going to continue talking about it. And I'm getting the signal that it's almost there.
At the end, it's almost there.
And we're gonna see where we stand. We're going to see where the body stands as it comes to an amendment on reducing personal property. And again, this is going to be an amendment that has to do with personal property over 5 years. This is going to be for over 5 years, and it's not going to even eliminate personal property tax for vehicles over 5 years. It's just going to reduce the amount of assessment percentage that we apply to those particular vehicles. Now, I would also entertain a discussion, if it's appropriate at this point when I offer this amendment, about if that's the right way to go about reducing personal property tax. You know, there may be some input from the body on is this the right way to target the right population group if we're not going to affect everyone. And by the way, my preference would be to do all property, personal property tax.
Right,
get rid
right
of that. And so we'll see how that goes. Now, we were talking a little bit about income taxes, and Senator, I had made the point that my concern about income taxes is that you're directly taxing the production of the state that is literally driving our economies in the first place.
Yes.
Oh. There we go. There we go. I've now been given the amendment, Senator, so if you don't mind, I think I'd like to go ahead and offer this amendment.
Absolutely.
Thank you. So thank you for the inquiry, Senator. Mr. President?
Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have an amendment.
Please send your amendment forward.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would ask that it be distributed, and I would ask for a waiver of the reading, and I would move for its adoption.
Hearing no objection, a waiver of the reading shall be granted. You've moved for the amendment's adoption. Senator, would you care to explain it?
Thank you, Mr. President. What this amendment does in its current format is it changes the assessment rate for any vehicle over 5 years or any personal property over 5 years. Currently, the property is 33%, and now I've drafted this amendment to change the assessment rate for personal property over 5 years to 1%. So I wouldn't be getting rid of personal property for personal property over 5 years, but I would be reducing it to a 3% of what it is right now. So it would leave unaffected the personal property between an age of 0 to 5 years. But for those that own older vehicles, have been paying for personal property tax for those 5 years, and generally these are going to be vehicles that are less in value and represent not a bulk even of the personal property tax revenues. This would provide, I believe, some personal property tax relief for a vast number of Missouri households. We have had an extended discussion about personal property taxes and how to move away from that in the Ways and Means Committee, and we actually pass out of Ways and Means Committee a far more aggressive version of a personal property tax increase. And with that, Mr. President, I would ask if I could inquire of the senator from Johnson.
Just for the benefit of the body, Senator, to restate the motion, Senator from the 23rd has moved for the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 7 to Senate Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill 1963. Senator from Johnson, do you yield to an inquiry? He does. Proceed.
Mr. President, thanks, Senator. This is just I think you're familiar with some of my efforts on personal property tax. In a couple
yes.
of minutes, I'm going to ask for a roll call vote, and I would just ask for your assistance, if you're willing, to help me get that roll call vote. Would that be all right?
Yes.
Very good. Senator, I look forward to further discussion on personal property tax. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. President?
Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I inquire of the senator from the 15th?
Senator from the 15th District does not appear to be on the floor. The Sergeant of Arms has indicated he will summon the senator
okay,
from the 15th District. Butler.
Is this, are we on right now? What's the delay?
We are waiting for the senator from the 15th. The senator from the 23rd has asked for an inquiry
okay.
To talk to him about his adoption of Senate Amendment Number 7.
All right, thank you.